Thank you to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. We spend a lot of time talking about how important it is to take care of your mental health. Therapy is an excellent way to do that. BetterHelp is an affordable mental health care option that fits right into your busy schedule. Just answer a few quick questions about your needs and preferences, and BetterHelp will match you with one of the thousands of experienced mental health professionals in their network. You can talk to your therapist over text, chat, phone, or video. You get to pick what works best for you, your comfort, and your schedule. If you feel like your therapist isn't the right fit, BetterHelp makes it easy to switch to someone new at no additional cost. So give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. BetterHelp is offering our listeners 10% off their first month of therapy. Just go to betterhelp.com/musicspeaks to get started. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/musicspeaks to get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Hey guys, we wanted to take a quick minute to tell you about our recent partnership with the Amazing Bones Coffee Company.
Let's face it, you're probably sick and tired of drinking that old plain Jane coffee brand every morning. Well, fret not, dear listener. Bones Coffee is here to kick your taste buds into high gear.
Bones Coffee has a wide variety of flavors to choose from, including maple bacon, peaches and spring, island grog, and my personal favorite, chocolate raspberry.
Once you become hooked on the coffee, you'll be excited to learn that they have plenty of merch options to choose from as well. T-shirts, mugs, tote bags, the list goes on.
You can buy their coffee in whole bean, ground, and even evil single serve options.
Guys, we wouldn't lie to you. This coffee is great, and we know that you're going to love it too, which is why we have partnered up with Bones Coffee, and now our listeners have an exclusive discount code.
Make sure to use the code MUSICSPEAKS at checkout for 10% off your order.
That's right, James. Go to bonescoffee.com to kickstart your new coffee addiction and use the code MUSICSPEAKS for 10% off today. If you're anything like me, free time is limited. So things like yard work are just not doable. And if you're also like me, you don't even own a lawnmower. That is why All Above Landscaping is the right choice. All Above includes a variety of options when it comes to your landscaping needs, including lawn installation, design, irrigation, debris removal, maintenance, and much more. If you're in the city of Sumter and you're looking for reliable service at a friendly price, give All Above Landscaping a call today. It's 803-464-7414. Mention that you heard this ad on this podcast and you'll get a special discount on your first service. Again, that's 803-464-7414. Call All Above Landscaping today. Like so many of you, we battle depression through life's ups and downs.
Music has always been the one thing we could rely on to get us through the tough times we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music, share our stories through songs and lyrics,
interview musicians and other artists,
break down genres,
deep dive into band biographies,
and much, much more.
This is the Wittenberg Fail
Music Speaks Podcast
with Blake Mosley,
James Cox,
and Amanda Dolan.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Wittenberg Fail Music Speaks Podcast, where we fight depression with the power of music. I'm your handicapped host, James Cox. And I have an awesome, awesome interview today with Juan Gonzalez, nicknamed Crunchy, I've just been told, which is great. I love that. First, let me tell you about him first. So, combine the classic sounds of the Beatles, Queen, and the Beach Boys. Give it a modern twist. And what do you get? That's right. It is a deliciously irresistible cosmic punch that's out of this world. The tastes then are wide and varied, which brings a unique flavor to the music. Then the newest release, The Club of Nerd Dads, came out on the holidays of May 4th, since Disney dropped the ball yet again with the Star Wars-related projects. Juan, how's it going, man?
It's going good. I'm going to issue a slight correction there. Okay. I think you were reading the press release from the last record.
Yes, yes.
The newest record is called For All Nerd yes. Kind.
And I did watch it, and I didn't listen to that too. Yeah, because I was like, okay, well, that's because Because Clever Nerd Dads has been out for a while, right?
Yeah, it came out during the pandemic, so yeah, 2020, yeah.
So you and me were talking earlier about the Florida weather. Now, you said it's pretty predictable. I lived in Florida one time because my dad's weather was stationed there, but I don't...
Where?
Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. So he was at MacDill?
Yep.
CENTCOM. The second overkill zone for any nuclear weapons, like war, any nuclear war. They're going to hit D.C. first, and then they're going to hit Tampa next. So we're just going to get vaporized down here.
Yeah,
if there's ever a good old nuclear war like they've been promising us since the 60s.
Yeah. Right, yeah. I live, my dad now lives in Sumter, and they said that Sumter is a very last resort, and I don't know if that's true. Have you heard of that?
Sumter. Is that in Florida?
Sumter, South Carolina.
Sumter, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Well, that's possible. I mean, yeah. I would venture to think that they would hit all the coastal cities.
Yeah.
But or at least any states that are near the coast. But I would guess. I mean, is there any military activity in South Carolina?
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Charlotte, and
it's gone.
Shaw Air Force Base is in Sumter, and I think
there's a big aircraft carrier there in Charlotte. That's right.
Yeah. So first of all, okay. So you are a busy man. Okay, so I have you as a touring and production agent, record producer, theater producer, and of course, science fiction nerd.
That's true.
And you are an international sex icon. Is what your website says.
That is correct.
That is correct.
It is a burden. It is a burden to carry.
Yes, very much so.
But someone has to do it.
Somebody, and why not you, right?
Why not me?
Why not you? You know, it all falls on you, brother. Yeah. But okay. So let me ask you this: since we mentioned Star Wars, and you're a nerd just like I am. Do you like Star Trek and Star Wars?
I like Star anything, man.
Star
Wars, Star Trek,
Starship
Troopers.
Yep.
You know, I mean, like, I don't care. I love science fiction, and the new record has a song dedicated to original series Star Trek. It opens up with the Star Trek song. The last record I did, the song Keyboard Warrior, which is about all of the angry Star Wars nerds on their keyboards and getting angry with each other. I mean, I'm a total sci-fi geek. Okay, I will say this. I don't understand Doctor Who. I don't get it. But, I mean, other people do, and that's cool.
That's totally
fine. You know
what I mean?
That's cool.
I don't understand the TARDIS because they said it's like an acronym for something. I'm like, okay, that's cool and everything, but I don't understand TARDIS and Doctor Who, and I don't get all that jazz.
I mean, I understand the premise behind it. Yeah. I don't understand the allure, but it's okay. I don't have to.
It's all good.
You know what I mean? I don't like eating squash either. So, but that doesn't mean you have to remove it from the dinner table. Just don't put it on my plate. I'm good.
There you go. Yeah, squash is not good for me either. But okay, so let's end all talking stuff between Star Wars and Star Trek. Which one is better and why? Because I mean, if you're a nerd just like me, but if I could say something, Star Wars is my end all be all. You know, not the later years, 4, 5, 6. You know, of course.
Okay, all right. So you're an original trilogy guy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 44, so
I mean. I hear you. Well, I got a couple years on you. I'm 52,
okay.
So I actually saw 4, 5, and 6 in the theaters when I was a kid.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
It was awesome. I mean, of course it was. You know.
Right. Yeah.
Man, which one's better? It's not fair
because
they're different things. You know, it's like trying to compare Coca-Cola to Sprite. They both have their place.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I love both equally. I have toys from both. Like my office at the theater that I work at, it's just laden with starships from Star Trek, and a little bit of Star Wars, and my kid's room is all Star Wars,
Right.
and his room is the room I wanted when I was a kid, and so he had never had a chance. It was like, I mean, he had his room was decorated Star Wars before he even could crawl. So it unfortunately for him, he will like Star Wars, damn it. He just will like
Exactly. Exactly.
it.
Yeah. Well, I guess the argument is comparable, though also good though, because you have lightsabers versus phasers, you know?
There you go.
But see, I think that the Star Wars lore is a lot bigger and wider than Star Trek. Although I never read the book, so then again, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny because Star Wars, to me, Star Wars is a cinematic experience, whereas Star Trek is more of a television experience.
Yes.
And the Star Trek original series characters, those movies were unbelievably epic. The Next Generation had one really good movie, and that was the First Contact, the
Yeah.
one with the Borg. That was really good. The other ones not so much,
Right.
especially Generations because they killed Kirk. But that movie is
Yeah.
forever,
That was funny.
forever the worst movie in Star Trek history. And then they
Yeah.
did those reboots, the JJ reboots,
Yeah. And those were okay. Those were okay.
they were all
Yeah.
right. I mean, they looked
Yeah.
fantastic. They looked spectacular. But
Right.
I don't. I have a real big problem with the whole alternate timeline, not sticking to canon thing, you know, because you have already have this incredible universe that you can write within.
Right.
And the parameters are not that strict. You know, that's just that this stuff's already happened, so you can't you can reference it, but you can't change it. And when you decide, well, I heard this thing, well, they're writing the stories they want to write. Yeah, well, they suck at it because they're not adhering to some basic rules. You know, you can write story. I mean, there's so much Star Trek to tell, and there's so much Star Wars to tell. I mean, the original extended universe books, the video games, all of that doesn't interfere with the history or the canon of Star Wars or Star Trek, period. So when you have to invent alternate timelines and you have to invent this nonsense to be able to tell your story, that's just lazy writing to
Right.
me.
Yeah.
That's just lazy, and then that just means that we have a lot of people in Hollywood that just are really bad at their jobs.
Just
And
nowadays, yeah.
I mean, if we want to talk bad at their job, let's talk about The Acolyte. My Lord, what a horrible, horrible show. And
Yeah.
I don't forget about all of the politics involved in it,
But
whatever.
yeah.
It's just bad writing, and it's over budgeted bad writing, and they couldn't have picked like a cast of characters that were just lamer than this cast of characters, and it was written by lame people,
Yeah.
for lame people. Because it's funny, like the people that I see that are into it, I'm like, wow, man, I have no interest in going and get a beer with you, dude. You're
Right,
terrible. You know, you're or girl, you're terrible.
Or
But then
anybody.
again, they probably think I'm a jerk. So whatever, just listen to
Yeah.
my record.
There you go. Actually, I saw this on your cosmicpunch.com, which everybody should go to now, come back later, and buy all of his merchandise, y'all. It says that Donald Trump listens to your record while he's on the toilet. Is
No,
that true? Is that true or false
no.
made up?
What I made the website, I just wanted to be ridiculous. And
Good job.
the whole point of Cosmic Punch is it's supposed to be fun. There's not a depressing note in it. I'm not trying to change the
Yeah.
world. I'm
Right.
not trying to depress people or make some sort of political statement or any kind of nonsense like that. It's about science fiction. It's about nerds. The earlier records had your basic love songs and stuff like that in it, and I wanted to take the project into a total nerd fandom world. To me, that's a lot more fun than trying to depress people
Right.
or tell them how much I love you. There's so much of that already. Enough.
Right.
I mean,
Right.
chicks aren't going to listen to it anyway. So, I mean, like, you might as well just make it, like, nerdy. At least the nerdy chicks will listen to it and think it's cool.
Right. Right. Which is all good. Yeah. But, man, you sucker me in. I'm like, Donald Trump really said that about you. I'm like, yes, dude. And I'm nothing for politics, but when you have somebody that may comment in on your, you know, so you suckered me right in, man. That's a good job on you.
Hey, no worries, no worries. But yeah, the whole thing about like, yeah, I listen to Cosmic Punch while I'm sitting on the toilet.
Yeah.
That's obviously not a real quote.
Right.
Neither is. I think I did one from Chancellor Merkel of Germany, like just to be a jerk. You know what I mean? Like I mean,
right.
It's silly. It's
yeah.
so silly. These people would never listen to this music. They should.
Yeah.
But they
oh
never
yeah. Look at that.
Okay.
You're right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So back to the music now. We did talk about Star Wars, but now we talk about music. And I love your music because it's such a good vibe. Because I am a nerd at heart. And I feel like you are inspired by bands that I was and I am. You have an album called, let me see here. Okay, Clay Pit Road, which is so great, right? So you said featuring Beatles, Queen, and somebody else.
Beach Boys.
Beach Boys. Beach
yeah.
Boys, yes, sir.
Yeah, that record was definitely like an ode to Queen and
yes.
Beach Boys and Beatles. That was the first record, and at the first two records. Okay, so... Clay Pit Road wound up becoming a record called FM Stereo. We released Clay Pit Road. It had 8 songs on it. And then got signed to a little minor label. And they wanted 4 more songs on it. They wanted like a 60-minute record, basically.
Yeah.
So we added some songs, and that became FM Stereo. And so if you ever hear songs from FM Stereo or Clay Pit Road, they go, wow, these are identical. They are identical.
Right.
But I had a writing partner at the time, this guy named Ryan Mikulski, Ryan Cosmonaut, great songwriter, and he and I put these records together, that one in Auto Reverse, and that was when the record, when the band, with the project was trying to mix it up with like your basic kind of retro rock and add a little bit of nerdiness here and there, but he left the band, and I said, okay, well, if it's just me now and I'm going to do everything, then it'll just be nerds. It'll just be straight up nerd
right.
music for
right.
nerds, written by a nerd for nerds. And if somebody else likes it, good for them, but it's not for them.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
For us, by us.
Hey man, what else can you ask for? You right. Yeah. But my co-host Amanda, she apologizes because she can't be here today with me. To interview you, she says that you have a Brian May guitar exclusively for that recording.
For the new record.
Okay.
For okay. all nerd kind, I used a Brian May guitar. Matter of fact, I got it back here. I'm not going to get it out of the bag.
Okay.
But I'll show it. Hang on.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
That.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Uh oh.
It lost me. There
you
go.
Oh, right, yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
Brian
nice.
May guitar.
Yeah.
Really fun. Really fun yeah. guitar. It's got great sound to it. And I used it exclusively on the new record for all the guitars. I wanted the record to have that tone. And I even mimicked through software because I don't have
right.
an AC30 amp or any of that stuff. But I mimicked through software his guitar tone. I researched his like signal path and what he puts in line and whatever, and I tried to get as close to the Queen guitar tone as you possibly can without having his fingers. I mean, that's at the end of the day, you can have all the equipment in the world to try to match your favorite players, but
yeah.
you don't ever have their you won't have their hands. So it'll be close, but it'll never be that.
Right.
Know?
Right. Yeah.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, because I probably got this wrong too, but the new album was released almost like a year ago.
New. So it was supposed to be.
Okay.
And I have my own studio and my own facilities. I don't have a deadline. I don't have a label or anything like that. So I just sat there and tweaked it into oblivion.
Okay.
And I put it out this year, but the original release date with the distributor was from last year, from October.
It came out. Yeah, so I knew I was wrong because Apple Music says 2023.
Yeah. It came out in June.
Okay. And this is a concept album, right?
It is a concept album. Okay. It's basically my journey as a nerd from my childhood until now. My first memories of any kind of science fiction was my mother, who used to watch reruns of Star Trek, the original series, you know, with Kirk and Spock and all that. And so it's that. And then, you know, as a child, some of the great, great television shows that were created by Glenn A. Larson, who is one of my personal writing heroes. That's a guy that could take any concept and write about it and make it awesome. Right. And I don't know if you know who Glenn A. Larson was, but Glenn A. Larson is a guy that he wrote Knight Rider, and he wrote for the $6 Million Man, Buck Rogers, Battlestar Galactica. I mean, in the song, if you listen to the song, I list all a bunch of his creations just because he's such an awesome guy. I tried it on the last record. I did another tribute song for Mike Post, who was a famous television theme writer, and I wrote a song about him in the style of him.
And, oh wow! Yeah.
Yeah. So this the Glenn A. Larson song is you know, since Glenn A. Larson didn't write music, at least I'm aware of, I just basically wrote about how awesome he is as a writer. And how much he influenced my life and my happiness as a child. And then song three is called Afternoon Cartoons, and that's pretty self-explanatory. Song four is the single, which is I Love Anime.
Right.
Because I do. I love anime, and anime was such a huge part of my life growing up. And then song five is literally the song called Growing Up. And it's a point when you get in your teenage years and your late teens, and you have to grow up, and everything just kind of starts. You start to realize how much things are kind of a drag. You know, it's not as fun as being a kid. And then song six is Sign of the Times, and it's what I've noticed is that how, and I'm guilty of this myself, going on to social media, and you got to put your opinion in anyway, even if nobody asks for it. You got to put your opinion in, you know. And that was that. And then Mint and Box is really one of the more fun songs on the record. Mint and Box is about toy collectors that never opened their toys. So and the progression of the song is he meets a girl, and she comes to his house, and he's like, "Hey, check out my toy collection."
And they're all in boxes, right?
Well, these are the ones that are on display. Oh, the other ones are in the closet. Those are Mint and Box.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And then the song progresses where they get married and they have children, and you're never going to get me to stop collecting toys.
Right.
And then song eight is a song called Woke. And this song is an argument between a woke and a non-woke science fiction nerd, done in the style of Jeff Steinman Meatloaf songs.
Oh,
like,
okay,
you know,
so
it's 7.5 minutes long,
well,
and
right,
it's
yeah.
unbelievably overproduced. I hired a girl singer to be, because every Meatloaf song has the girl singer that comes in randomly and starts singing duets with him, right? So, or at least the big hits, like Paradise by the Dashboard Light and I Would Do Anything for Love, these great Meatloaf songs. And so I hired this girl named Samantha Martin, from Orlando, who's a great singer. She plays in a cover band up in Orlando. And then I hired a gentleman from Chicago who played all the horn section parts. So all the horns that you hear are real horns. So it's just really overproduced, and it's just ridiculous. And every time I listen to it, I just kind of giggle at how much went into this completely nonsensical song about, which was an argument about people that are woke and non-woke arguing with each other. But then when you hear them singing the duet section, you realize that they're saying the same things to each other.
Without realizing that they are, yeah.
Without realizing they're saying the exact same things to each other. And it's okay to have different opinions. It really is. It's kind of cool. And then the last song, When the Season Starts Again, is about streaming services and how we wait an entire year to watch 10 episodes in a week. And then we got to wait another year.
Yeah,
and we're just paying through the nose for all this entertainment, and it's not enough.
I'm kind of blamed on that one because I love watching. I don't like waiting for shows to come out every week, you know.
Yeah.
And when they came out with the streaming service, I could watch Friends all one time and not, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just fantastic to me. And I watch Office over and over and over again. But question about Myth in the Box. Did you get inspired by the 40-year-old virgin? Because that's the only movie I've ever seen where he has all of a Myth in the Box.
Well, mate, I was that guy.
Oh,
not
okay.
I wasn't a 40-year-old virgin, don't get me wrong. But I have always been a toy collector. Matter of fact, my children, to this day, they're playing with some of the same toys that I played with when I was 6.
Right.
Because I kept them in such incredible condition.
Yes.
And because they have no resale value, I'm like, what the heck? Let the kids play with it. Even though I've kept this thing for 40 years and never opened it, what the heck? Let the kids play with it. I can't sell it anyway.
Right, yeah.
So my kid has they have the Fisher Price castle. I'm sure you don't remember this thing, but it was this awesome castle thing for Weebles. And they have my original Mego Batman car from the TV show Batman.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, they got all this stuff, and they're playing with it, and they love it. Mm-hmm. And I love it too, being a dad. I get to buy toys for my kids and play with toys.
It's
awesome.
I'm pretty sure I still have my He-Man and my Turtles and G.I. Joe somewhere up in my mom's attic, man. But I think some of those can go for like Muku bucks. Other geodos like Diamond Dozen, you know.
Yeah, no, it's right. And look, at the end of the day, it's injection molded plastic.
Right.
So it's just Diamond Dozen kind of nonsense. It's just a question about, were you lucky enough to have that one action figure that was considered rare, and if you were you smart enough to not open it? Okay, cool. Then you might have a $200 or $300 toy.
Yeah.
But that means you still have to get rid of it. You still have to sell it. You can't take
it
with you.
You gotta find the right buyer. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't take it with you.
No.
I guess if you account for the rate of inflation, it's probably the same thing anyway.
Didn't
really increase in value so much as money just decreased in value.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the main figures or toy sets that I'm really mad that I didn't ever find was Krang's Technodrome from Turtles. I could never find that big.
You couldn't find it?
No. I think they're everywhere. I'm like, God, you know.
Yeah, there were certain toys for me that evaded me.
Right.
Like one of them was not the G1, but the G2 Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe. The one that came with Timber, the wolf.
Yes.
I could not find that in any store. And I scoured every toy store. And I was 14 at the time. I was still playing with G.I. Joe's like a child.
Who cares?
But I mean, I didn't care.
No.
I still don't care. You know, I really don't. Matter of fact, like, my office is a spotlight booth in a theater, right?
Yeah.
So you can look into my office and see, like, you know, the spotlights. And obviously the spotlights have to shoot through. And I have along the ledge all of my Star Trek starships, you know, Enterprise B, D, Klingon Bird of Prey, and Borg Cube, all the stuff. I have all the time I see patrons at the theater coming and taking selfies with my toys because they just think they're hilarious. You know, the whole thing is just, it's fun. And there's so many grownups that, you know, people that are my age in the 50s or whatever, they they really appreciate it.
Yeah,
they really do.
One more thing about the toys is, I think the 80s toys would never die because I've seen the band, I forgot the band's name, but the drummer had Skeletor, the original Skeletor, on his actual drum kit while he was working. I'm like, thank God for 80s toys, man. 80s toys would never die, you know? I don't know what it is.
And Skeletor was such an awesome character.
Yes.
You know, he really was. Even with Frank Langella playing him in the Masters of the Universe movie that Cannon put out with Dolph Lundgren.
Right.
I mean, even that version of Skeletor is awesome.
It's creepy, you know, though. Yeah, he was a lot more creepier than the cartoon was.
Sure.
Right, because I've never seen anything like that. And Beastman was always one of my favorites, too. So we're talking about overproduced albums, and on your website, CosmicPunch.com, everybody should go there. It says, was this whole album overproduced according to you, or was that one song?
No, the whole record.
Okay.
The whole record is just, it's insanity. If you listen to it in headphones, there's so much happening. And I just believe in the concept that Motorhead had, and that was everything louder than everything else.
Right.
And the term overproduced was something that was given to bands like Queen and stuff that were just stacking instruments and doing all these crazy
vocals,
things.
Yeah.
I'm not likening myself to their genius, you know, but that's the only thing that's what I think sounds good. I don't like stripped down rock and roll. I really don't.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, I want to hear everything.
Yeah. So when you were, producing this out, you know, making the mix, how do you know that it was finally done to your own worst critic?
That's the problem.
Right.
I spent way too much time mixing this record.
Okay.
Which is why it said I had a October 23 release and it came out in June of 24.
Yeah.
I kept massaging that record in different directions for different audiences. Like, I'm like, I'll make this a little bit more of a pop mix. I'll make this a little heavier mix. I'll do this, I'll do that. And at the end of the day, the straw that broke the camel's back was I had been working on the record pretty much nonstop for over a year in the mix stage. Mm. And I just said, okay, I'm done. I'm feeling creatively beat. And it's time for me to put the stupid thing out. I had completed the music video, which took me almost a year to make as well. And I don't know if you've seen the music video or not. But the music video is all CGI. I generated all the CGI. I did everything. It takes, just the rendering time on the video alone is almost a week to render the thing. So it was just like, okay, this thing is done. And in many ways, it's more of a luxury to have an actual deadline because you have to put it out.
Right.
Right?
Yes, yes.
I'm working without a deadline. I can do what I want. So I had to have these self-imposed deadlines. And in this particular case, I just said, okay, I'm done. I'm good. I don't think I can make this sound better. I'm sure people would disagree. I'm sure there's going to be engineers that listen to it and go, I can make that sound better. You know, because, you know, everybody knows two things, in the, you know, what their butt smells like and sound. You know what I mean?
Which is true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You recognize your own farts and a bad record. You know, I said, okay, I'm done. The video's done. I'm done. It's time to put this thing out and move on because I have a whole other record in me for a totally different project that I want to put out, and I can't get to it until I'm done with this.
Right. Exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah. Well, you mentioned CGI. When you were just explaining, and that's sort of like AI. I want to ask you about AI music and where do you think it's going? Because I heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that there is going to be like a court order to stop AI music from happening because it's taken away from the actual. No, have you heard that?
It's never gonna stop. So look, at the end of the day. You know, AI has always made music in that you have your bands, right? And then you have somebody else that acts as the brain of the band that's an exterior person, whether it be the artisan repertoire person, A&R guy, guy that works for the label, who's deciding what sounds good and what doesn't sound good on your record. Your lyrical content is policed by your record label or policed by television or whatever. So there's always some sort of artificial intelligence that goes into making anything that you do.
Right.
Now, computers are doing it, and it's going to allow the virtually talent-free to be able to make talented-sounding things. And I guess it's par for the course. Years ago, David Bowie had this quote where he said, "One day, music will be like water or electricity. We really don't care who makes it. We only know we'd like it."
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. So does that mean that the musician is like the dodo bird and we're eventually going to be extinct? Probably not. Probably not like that.
Right.
I think that people are going to start to use artificial intelligence as a means to create. Now with the CGI stuff, that wasn't AI. That was, you know,
old
school computer animation. That's terrible. Right. But I mean, it's already bad enough.
Yeah. Right.
It's bad enough. But I have been using AI to make these lyrical videos. And lyrical videos are where you have your song playing and you've got your lyrics popping up on screen. And then there's various visuals for people to see. And it would just take me way too long to do all of that. And right. I want to get product and content and view counts, et cetera, and keep my subscribers happy or that kind of thing. So, as a means to an end, it definitely, it's also time consuming, to wait for the computer to do all these things, and you have to put the right prompts in, and you have to start over and start again because stop and start over again because the prompt made the computer do something stupid and it doesn't look cool. So there is some of that. There's still creativity going on. I feel bad for people that are digital artists.
Yeah.
Meaning people that do visual medium, like guys that make record covers and that kind of thing, because in all fairness, AI is kicking their butts.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean... Well, you know, it doesn't mean that they aren't talented. You know, I can tell you that as a guy that uses computers to make music, and that, you know, I'm using plugins and digital audio workstations, and it's not tape machines and all that like back in the day.
Right.
I have way more tools available to me than the Beatles did.
Yeah.
You know, to make music. Yeah. I don't have the talent, you know what I mean? But I have way more tools available to me. Right? So, I wonder what a Beatles record would sound like
today
if it was recorded today.
Yeah.
You know, like what would Sgt. Pepper's be like? How would John Lennon react to pitch correction and that kind of stuff? Mm-hmm. I mean, how would that work out?
Right.
Would we ever get those Beatles records ever because they have no deadline anymore because they could work on it forever?
Right, and overproduce them. But I love you for creating lyric videos because I love lyric videos because if you can sing with the song, that's 10 times better than figuring out the lyric yourself, you know?
For sure. It's not like the old days where you would have the big old vinyl and had the lyric sheet where the disc would go in to like the paper and had the lyric sheet on the paper.
Right.
Or the CD, you know, the booklet, those were great times. It's different now, people don't buy it. Well, there are some people that are still buying pieces of plastic to listen to music on. Most of the time people are just streaming. They're using Spotify or whatever, Apple to listen to music. Yeah. I mean, when you have an entire Tower Records in your phone.
Yeah. Why would you need physical stuff, you know? Yeah, so yeah. But you know, I did hear, and this is true, that if fans support their band, their favorite bands, you should buy their physical merchandise because like 95% of it goes to them instead of the actual streaming service.
Well, not 95%, but a better percentage.
Right? Yeah, a lot more percentage. Yeah.
a better percentage goes to the artists.
Right.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Physical media will always be the best way to distribute wealth to an artist.
Yes.
It used to be that concerts were the commercial for the piece of plastic that you were selling in a store somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, your music is your business card, and your live show is how artists are making money.
Right. Exactly.
So I mean, very few of them make money off of streaming or royalties from radio play and stuff like that. They're making money on that $200 concert ticket that you're paying for.
Right. Yeah.
All right. That's how they make their money.
Right. Exactly. So I have about four more quick questions for you, and then I'll let you go.
Sure.
So it says that you are a tour manager on your PodMatch,
yep.
and I would like to thank PodMatch for getting us together and you reaching out to me on PodMatch. First question is, do you manage anybody right now? And if so, what?
I'm a retired tour manager.
Oh, okay.
I did that for 23 years.
Oh, nice.
Touring all over the world with all kinds of pop, rock, and metal bands. A lot of metal. I did a lot of heavy metal, death metal, you know, that kind of stuff. But every once in a while, I dust off the old laminate, and I'll go and do a weekend warrior thing with one of my former bands that I worked for. For example, I remember telling you I was going on a trip at the end of July. I'm going down to South America with a band called Symphony X, which is like prog metal.
You're right.
They're really great. And it's one of those bands that like will get me out and go, yeah, sure, I'll go, because it's such a thrill to actually mix them, because I do front of house sound for them as well as tour manage, which means that I'm doing all the logistics of getting them in and out of the venue, collecting the money from the promoters, getting them on the airplanes and that kind of stuff. I'm that guy with the cricket bat and Spinal Tap. That's me.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going down there for 2 weeks with those guys. I'm going to do 3 dates in Brazil, 1 date in Chile, 1 in Peru, and 1 in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. The last time I toured with them was 2 years ago, and oddly enough, it was South America. I wonder why they keep hiring me for South America. Could it be my name? No, I'm just kidding. No,
right.
I do speak Spanish. I do speak Spanish,
right,
so it makes it a little easier.
Right.
But I work for the band in Europe and in America as well.
Okay. Yeah.
As well as other bands like Morbid Angel and Nile and I did a pop music. I did Alexa Ray Joel, who was the daughter of Billy Joel, and I did that for a few years. And I mean, I have a pretty decent resume, but I would usually stick with a band for a long, long time.
Years, right?
You know, 10 years,
which is
five
good
years,
cause,
10 years.
Because that builds like a strong relationship between you and band, and it makes them even more excited for you to come back and work with them later on down the road.
Sure. Like with Morbid Angel, I produced 2 records for that band. As well as, even though I drum tech, guitar tech, did sold merchandise, I produced 2 records, I did a documentary as a film director and editor for Morbid Angel, everything. And finally, when I just retired from the whole scene, I was just like, wow, like, you know, what are they going to do without me? Well, you know, life goes on. They found somebody else, and it's
right.
Cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
it's cool. But I'm sure if you wanted to come back, they're like, oh, yeah, come on back, right?
I talk to the guitar player all the time on the telephone, and he's a great guy, and he's always said anytime I ever wanted to come back, I could come back. I've never really been fired from anything. I just kind of moved on.
Yeah, that's always a good plus, you know, because it tells people that you're a
trainer. From what I can tell.
Them.
You never know, right? From what I can tell, you know?
They haven't fired me yet, as far as I can tell, yeah.
They were like, when I said, yeah, I'm leaving, they're like, all right, good, don't let the door hit you in the rear.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You know, who knows? Maybe people hate me and I just don't, and I'm oblivious.
Nobody. How could somebody hate you, man? I love you right now. I love you. You're a good guy right now.
Okay, so for our aspiring managers, you know, who want to be tour managers, can you tell us what makes a great manager to be on the road, or, like, you know, do you have any don't do's or do's?
Well, I can say this as far as professionalism in a tour management situation, okay? You're going to be dealing with a lot of people that are going to be giving you a decent amount of money every day.
Yeah.
Because you have to collect the guarantees for the bands. You have to manage the merchandise money and all that stuff. And you are essentially the Bank of America. You know, you are the one-man Bank of America. And you are responsible for the tour's ability to stay afloat and or make a profit if it's possible. Some tours are just designed to lose money because they are promotional materials for the band trying to just do something. So they're spending money and spending money to look cool.
Right.
And even though there's no payoff. But having a professional attitude and acting professionally when there are thousands and upwards around millions of dollars at stake is an axiom. So you know, you are the face of the band. As a tour manager, you are the face of the band professionally, not artistically. That's the band's job.
Right.
You are the face professionally, so you have to maintain a professional attitude when you're dealing with the business end of it.
Yeah.
And you should. So the best advice I could ever give to anybody that wants to get into tour management or wants to know how to act as a tour manager, it's like, you are the only thing that's corporate on the tour. Act like it.
Yeah. And
act like it.
And managers also do, like, a lot of things. They also book the bands, correct? Or like, do you have a booking
agent? No.
Okay.
You have booking agents that book the bands.
Okay.
You know, you have people that's their job. They're there to go find shows. A manager, you have management, and then you have tour management, right? Mm-hmm. So management, they're the people that deal with the record labels. They deal with the publicists. They deal with the booking agents. They deal with the overall business of the band.
Right.
Tour managers deal with the business of the band while they're on tour.
Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Whatever they need, where to stay, right?
You're booking the hotels. Yeah. You're getting the bus. You're getting the bus rental done. Yeah. You're getting bananas for the dressing room. You're getting, you know what I mean? All the stuff that the guy with the cricket bat in Spinal Tap did. That's what you're doing.
Okay, nice. Two more questions, and then we're gonna send you off to so you can go and get some eat or something. I'm not, you know, serving hunger right now. But all right, so. Four bands. If you had a Mount Rushmore of four bands, which ones would they be? Out of every thing that you like, which I know that's a hard question.
No, that's not fair.
I know.
That's not fair, mate. Because there's so much awesomeness out there.
Yeah.
You know, if I had let's can we rephrase it as if I was having a dinner party, who would I want there?
Yes. Let's do that. Yes.
Let's do that.
That's okay. BS.
So yes, obviously the members of Queen, the members of the Beatles, members of Styx, the members of the Beach Boys, members of Kiss, members of Metallica.
Can I stop you right there? Because I got a question about Kiss. Do you think they're ever going to retire?
Well, I mean, Gene Simmons is already playing live shows.
Yeah,
you know, as the Gene Simmons band,
right? Yeah, but that's still—I mean, come on, you know, that's
Well, I think that Kiss, as we knew it, is done.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, because I come out with virtual stuff, right? After
the virtual characters thing—I mean, that'll fly for about 10 minutes.
Yeah,
I think that Kiss is an entity. So I think that what will wind up happening is there'll be like a Vegas show where people are playing the role of Kiss, and you'll have a guy out there who's dressed like Gene Simmons, and he does the tongue and the fire and the blood, and a guy with Paul Stanley who wears a guitar really well, and an ace and all that. And they're going to go out there and they'll have the bombs and they're going to play all the awesome songs. And it'll be just like watching Kiss, even though you know it's not Kiss.
Right.
And that's okay. Right. I think that what they built were cartoon characters of themselves.
Yes.
And right. that is such a great business model.
Yeah.
There's Gene Simmons the person, and there's Gene Simmons the guy on stage with the makeup and the bat wings and all that stuff.
Right.
and it happens to be the same name, Gene Simmons.
Right. Yeah.
But even that's a stage name. But out of makeup, he's Gene Simmons, that kind of thing, and that's just great because it'll live forever. Forever, the idea of Kiss can exist.
Yeah,
unlike bands that are real people, like Queen. And with Freddie's gone, and there'll never be another Freddie Mercury, you might get a guy that kind of sounds like him, looks like him, plays like him, whatever. But it's not Freddie. It's a guy, that kind of looks like him. It's a caricature. It's a cartoon, And Kiss is a living cartoon.
Right.
And that's a totally different thing.
Yeah. Have you seen Gwar? Because Gwar is exactly like Kiss. The band can live forever because they're in costume,
Yeah, I did shows with Gwar years and years ago.
Oh, okay. Such nice
guys. In the mid-90s. Yeah. In the mid-90s when they were like exploding kind of,
Yeah, yeah.
I did a tour with a band called the Jenna Torturers, and they had Gwar. They were with Gwar for, I think, 5 or 6 dates.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
They're really cool people. I've met them.
Yeah. They are such nice guys. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that Odorous, the main singer, I think he passed away.
Yeah. Dave Rucki. Yes. He did pass away.
Yeah. He passed away. Yeah. And the few times that I had the opportunity to talk to him, he seemed like really fun.
Yes.
And just a character. And I remember seeing him on Fox News. He was on a show called Red Eye on Fox News, where he played the intergalactic guy. And I'm thinking to myself, like, how did the singer of Gwar get on Fox News?
Right. It's called Greg Gutfeld loves the band.
Now, years ago, when I was out with Morbid Angel, I invited Greg Gutfeld to a show in New York City.
Really?
And he responded, and he said, he was like, I would love to come because I love Morbid Angel.
Right.
But he was in the middle of writing a book and he had a deadline. And so he's like, I just can't, I have only so many hours to write in a day, and your show is right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I appreciate it. Thanks. We were ready. We had a whole section in Irving Plaza roped off for him and everything, but he did write and tell us that he couldn't make it. But that guy's for real. That guy, Greg Gutfeld, is for real. I'm just letting you know, he's for real. He's a real dude.
He's like the top. He's like the number one host or something in the world right now, which is great. My dad loves him to death.
He's got the largest number of viewership in late night.
Yes, he does. And that is
late night.
Ellen, Kimmel, whoever you got, he's the man right now. But
yeah, he's dominating the Tonight Show, and that should say something.
That's pretty great. Yeah. But going back on Odorous, Jerungus, and David Buck, I had a fortunate opportunity to get a picture with him, and he was such a sweetheart of a guy. He'd say, "Yeah, come on," So I got a picture with Odorous, which is very, very rare, because they don't do a lot of pictures with people. I've been told, so that's awesome for me.
That's
so
great, man. Yeah, if you're a fan and you got your picture with them, I'm lucky. At the theater that I work at, I get a lot of people coming through that were outside of my circle when I was touring, I'm huge fans of, and then they show up in my theater and I get to hang out and talk to them and all of that, and it's a blast.
Right.
Like one of the bands is Stryper. I love Stryper.
Yeah.
And I love Stryper. And they I got them booked into the theater, and they were it just to be able to hang out and talk. Matter of fact, I got both the guitar players in Striper to play my Brian May guitar. They wanted to play at the time I had it in my office, and I'm like, you guys played one of these things before? And they're like, nah, let's break it out, let's check it out. They hook it up to their rigs and they're just jamming on this guitar, and they're like, man, this is awesome. And I was thinking to myself, this is awesome. Are you kidding?
Right. I should have recorded it, right?
You guys are Striper. You guys rule.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Last question, and we might have to rephrase this too, because I'm not sure how this is going to be. But I always ask this question to my guests, is there one band, one artist, or one song that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me or your wife or your daughters or anybody how it makes you feel deep inside your soul?
Is there a song that invokes some sort of emotional response from me that I'm not allowed to show people?
You're not allowed. You can't physically tell them about how it makes you feel. An artist, band, or song.
Well, if I tell you, then that ruins it, doesn't it?
No. Oh, yeah. kind of, but I mean, you can tell me the song or the title, and I'm like, okay, that's fair,
No, I mean, a song that invokes an incredible emotional response is the song The Show Must Go On, which is the last song on Innuendo from the band Queen.
Queen's song.
Record Innuendo, that song The Show Must Go On was intended to be the curtain call song for Freddie Mercury. And it was supposed to be the last thing that he recorded or whatever, at least it was presented that way when the album came out. Right. Apparently, according to he continued to record after the record, the Innuendo came out, and those recordings wound up coming out later on. But at the time in 91, I believe, or I think it was 90 or 91 when he passed away. If you listen to the lyrics of that song and realize that it's supposed to be his swan song, and this is it, this is supposed to be, it really puts you into his brain and what was going on.
Right. Well, that's a great answer, and I can't elaborate on that because it means so much to you. So, and that's what I wanted from you is your feeling from the song, song that you really can't tell us about how it makes you feel inside. So you did perfect. Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So. Now the secret's out.
Yeah. Okay. So, do we have any more albums or singles or anything planned for the near future coming out?
Well, I mean, this just came out.
Oh yeah.
But I'm going to be working on a new Apex Zenith record, which is 80s synth pop. I already put out an Apex Zenith record about a year or so ago. I guess it's a little under 2 years now.
Yeah.
And that is a continuation of the Synth Lord. And then once I put out this next Apex Zenith record, once that's done, then I will work on the final Cosmic Punch record, because I believe in doing everything in trilogies.
Right.
Right. So even though technically this is the fourth Cosmic Punch record, it'll be the third as a solo.
Okay.
And so therefore it's the trilogy, right? The final Cosmic Punch record is done, then I will move on to recording other types of music. It's going to be impossible to get me to stop recording and writing songs because I own all the gear and nobody can tell me no. So I'm only limited by my ability to play, my ability to sing, which I guess is questionable, but
it's
subjective,
right?
It's subjective, and my ability to mix and make records. I mean, the I always like to joke about my dozens of fans, all the flat the earth, they listen to my music.
Right.
But I mean, all I want to do is put a smile on people's faces and let them, I write pure escapism. I'm not trying to preach to anybody,
right,
or anything like that. And I guess Lord love the people that do. That's just not my thing.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So everybody that's listening to the audio version and the video version, thank you. And go to CosmicPunch.com and buy all of this stuff, download all of this stuff, especially for all Nerdkind, which just released last month, we talked about. And he is on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We're not on TikTok yet.
What can I do in a minute? I can't do anything.
Yeah, exactly. I don't understand TikTok either. So I'm right there with you. Yeah, so. We do love you on When Words Fail Music Speaks, so please come back anytime you want to. I feel like we became best friends right now, right?
It's a pleasure doing your show.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And feel free to come back anytime, okay?
You bet.
All right. And with that said, everybody, thank you for listening to the show. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.